Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, June 30th, 2017. And with me today, I have John Martellaro. How are you, John?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. And Jeff Butts, how's it going for you?
It's going fantastic, man. Happy Friday to you.
Happy Friday to you. And and in the United States, happy four-day weekend. Also, happy Independence Day. Just so everyone knows, we will not be recording a show on Monday or Tuesday. So that will be July 3rd and July 4th, because everyone at Mac Observer is taking both those days off. And then we'll be back on Wednesday, July 5th. So just so everyone knows, don't want anyone freaking out thinking something went horribly wrong and the shows have been taken hostage. Anyhow, hey, High Sierra public beta is out.
And, yes, it is.
Yeah, and I've been running developer beta on a secondary computer, so not my primary computer. And I'm curious if you guys have been running this, running High Sierra, either developer or public beta, if we have any suggestions on what people should do if they want to install, and just whatever we come up with.
That can I just have one note. I've been working with the developer betas. I started with beta 1, and it's interesting the way the progress bar goes on my MacBook. Sometimes it goes backwards. So don't be alarmed when you see that.
I've noticed that in a couple apps where the progress bar keeps jumping forward and back.
On one of my installs on my Hackintosh, at the end of it copying files over, it actually said time remaining negative 391 seconds.
So basically, Apple's figured out how to warp the time-space continuum.
I've seen some situations where my progress bar was almost at the end and it said remaining time 19 minutes. And then I'd look away and then I'd look back and it would be done.
Oh, that happens on my Hackintosh all the time. And usually it means something bad just happened. But with the developer beta or the public beta, I'm in a state of shock at how well it's running.
I haven't had any problems installing beta 1, beta 2, or beta 2 update 1. It's been slow because the MacBook is not a speedy CPU, but it all worked just fine.
Well, you're installing it on hardware that's designed for Mac OS.
That's true.
I'm not.
All right, so I think it's important we remind everyone that we're talking about beta software.
Yeah.
And if you're going to install it on your own computer, you need to remember that when Apple says it's beta software, it's really beta software. And that means some things will be broken. Mm-hmm. Some features may not function at all or might just be missing. And you can expect crashes. There's always the possibility of data loss. So these are all things that go along with rushing right up to the bleeding edge and jumping into beta versions of the operating system. But that said, aside from weird little things, you know, like progress bars that go forward and backwards, macOS High Sierra is running really well for me.
Yeah, same here. It doesn't work with Pathfinder. For me, I had to disable that in the user account so Pathfinder wouldn't launch when I booted up.
Oh, sure. Fantastical is not working for me. But, you know, that's not a dig on Pathfinder or Fantastical. We're talking about beta operating systems. Things break. So, you know, it'll be fine.
That's curious that Fantastical is not working for you, because it works fine for me.
Well, I'll uninstall it and reinstall it. But, you know, this is all part of the beta thing. Something that works for someone may not work for someone else.
Right, absolutely.
And what it may be is that I have a combination of other things that result in Fantastical crashing. And if I didn't have the very specific setup that I have, it wouldn't be happening.
Now, one thing that I'll point out is not compatible with High Sierra. Simply because if people are using this beta, they're going to try to use the High Sierra beta too. GPG Suites beta 3 is not compatible with High Sierra. When Mail launches, it says the plugin is not compatible, and it disables it.
You know, and that may very well be nothing more than the signature in GPG.
It's possible.
Because I've seen some updates where all they do for various Mail plugins or add-ons, where all they do is change that signature, and then it's okay again.
Mm-hmm.
So that may be an easy fix there.
It might be.
It's time to talk about Roaring Apps, because Roaring Apps has an entry now for High Sierra.
Oh, they do.
And that's a great page to go to, roaringapps.com. We'll tell you about compatibility as users report, and you'll get checkboxes or question marks. So you'll have a guide there about what apps to watch out for.
Yes.
And see, this is an ongoing problem for GPG Suite. Every new version of macOS, they have to redevelop their encryption protocols and their plugin ties to the Mail app.
Man, that's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. So if someone is deciding that they're going to jump into High Sierra public beta, what advice would you guys give them before they do that?
Do a carbon copy clone.
Yeah, carbon copy cloner, Time Machine backup. And when you proceed, I believe it's safe and worthwhile to check the APFS box and go ahead and start experimenting with that.
You know, and the funny thing is, you got the APFS box. I did not. my Mac updated Mac to APFS, my MacBook Air.
2011?
Is it 2011 or 2013?
I thought.
I don't remember.
What type of storage device do you have?
It's an SSD.
Always been one on Mac.
Is it a SATA SSD, or is it tied directly to the PCI bus?
That's a good question. I don't remember what it was in that vintage.
Okay.
So I went ahead and did it for you automatically?
Yeah, it wasn't even an option. It just took me to APFS and was done.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What we're seeing is that certain system management BIOSes automatically transition to APFS without an option to disable it.
All right. So that's what I have, whatever that is, since I didn't get the option. And even if I had been given the option, I absolutely would have made that jump. So.
I
don't know what percent. It is, but you'll recover some space because of there's a volume injury just that's no longer required. I don't.
Wow, John, you're getting really choppy, but I think I was able to translate from your R2-D2 speak, and what you're saying is that if you go to APFS, you'll actually get some more free space on your drive.
Roger.
Which is great. Okay, so the big thing that I'm hearing based on what you guys have said and what I think I said at the beginning, make sure you have a good backup before you start, and don't put it on a mission-critical machine.
Yeah.
And just remember, it's beta. Expect things to break. But that said, it's been a smooth transition on my MacBook Air. I've been very pleased with High Sierra so far, and I'm looking forward to seeing how this progresses as more betas come out, and we're working our way towards fall when the official release comes out.
And here's an interesting tidbit that we can almost extrapolate about the upcoming more modular Mac Pro.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect that users who buy the new Mac Pro, whenever it comes out, either in 2018 or 2019, will be able to change the NVMe drives. The solid state drives that are plugged directly into the motherboard or logic board.
Oh, okay.
The reason I think that is because Apple has expanded its support for that type of drive. On my Hackintosh, I used to have to install third-party drivers to get my SSD drive to work. Mm-hmm. I don't need that anymore.
So that ultimately may make it easier for third-party companies to give us SSD upgrades for our Macs.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll be able to get a Samsung Samsung NVMe non-volatile. Oh, I can't remember the rest of what it stands for. Memory enhancement or memory engine. You'll be able to get that faster, much much faster type of solid state drive, and install it in your Mac Pro. And you'll pay a fraction of what you would pay if you got the upgrade from Apple.
Jeff, do you know if the new iMacs, not the iMac Pro, but just the new iMacs announced at WWDC, do they use NVMe drives?
I do not know. I don't recall from iFixit's teardown. I'd have to check into that.
I'm just curious.
Yeah.
So, all right. I really want to make sure we hit the second topic that I picked out today, or we picked out today. So, yet there's another thing that I really wanted to talk about, which was High Sierra with Hackintoshes. So, Jeff, would you be willing to come back on in the next few days and chat about that?
I would love to.
Okay,
That's my passion, man.
That's why I want to talk to you about this. Okay, so we'll talk about High Sierra and Hackintoshes soon. But right now we're going to talk about manuals, and what brought this up is, Jeff, in our morning meeting today, you started talking about how we don't have manuals for things anymore, or at least we certainly don't have printed manuals for the apps we use. And so what took you down this path?
Well, okay. So someone on Facebook, I've published several articles exploring some of the, and I call them hidden macOS features and hidden iOS features. Mm-hmm. They're not really hidden. They're just not documented. And the title of one of my articles was five macOS hidden features make your life easier. And on Facebook, someone said, why is Apple hiding things that make our lives easier? And so that got me thinking back to 20 years ago, maybe more than that, because my daughter, my oldest child, was just a baby. And I was working at IBM on the OS2 Warp 4 Merlin project. And one of the things that I had to do was develop the technical documentation for this new version of OS2 Warp. And the amount of time that we had to spend doing that was just crazy, because there were so many developers working on so many aspects of the operating system, and you had to chase down what each one was doing, what keyboard shortcuts worked, what aspects of the voice type dictation worked, what aspects didn't work, what you could do, what you couldn't do. Mm-hmm. And it was virtually impossible to keep up with everything. And the problem's only gotten worse, because our operating systems are so much more powerful, have so many more features, so many more people working on them, and yet they're trying to save money. They're trying to make a profit off of this stuff. And so they can't have the level of documentators that would be required to chase down every single keyboard combination, every single mouse click, every single force touch combination, and put that into a manual.
It also, Jeff, what do you think about this? It also requires a very special skill set to be a technical writer and a manual writer. Somebody who's both very skilled technically, but also a great writer and can explain things.
Yeah.
Those people are hard to find.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm an oddity. I'm an anomaly. I've got a background in teaching English, and I've got a background in teaching computer technical subjects. And you don't see that very often.
No, you don't. All right, so I have a question for you.
42.
So the whole manual thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I get that it's like crazy expensive in man hours and other resources to create these manuals, especially now that we have products like just Mac OS High Sierra that are so complex. I mean, I can't even imagine how thick the manual would be. So I get why we don't have a thick manual in the box. Mm-hmm. The book would weigh more than the computer.
Yeah.
So Apple has documented all of this stuff in their knowledge base, and they do tips on their website. Mm-hmm. So are things like this enough?
No, it's not enough. And honestly, that's why I have a job.
That's probably because, why we all have jobs, actually.
Right. Because we can explore this stuff and report it to people. The problem is discoverability. And you mentioned this in our morning meeting. Mm-hmm. You know, Apple could write knowledge-based documents until they got blue in the face. But if you don't know what you're looking for, how are you going to find it? It's that aha moment when someone reads one of my articles and says, oh my gosh, I can do that? I never even thought of it.
Yeah, and we do have the Tips app now in iOS. Mm-hmm. And I'm surprised at how many people hate on that app.
Oh, I know.
I think it's actually a great thing. It's just not something I need because the tips that they're showing me are things I already know. But we are the anomalies here.
Exactly. You know what? Whenever a new version of iOS comes out, I leave Tips notifications turned on for at least 2 weeks.
That's very clever.
Just so I can catch something that I might not have known otherwise.
That's very clever. Wow.
Jeff, let me propose something to you. So I'm sitting here looking at something called the iOS Security Guide, March 2017. It's 68 pages PDF. Very sophisticated and deep and technical. So Apple must feel like it's worth writing about iOS security, return on investment or promotion of their security aspect, to write a 68-page PDF. But boy, you could pack a lot of tips and information about iOS itself into 68 pages. So what do you think of that?
I would argue that a manual that was written in language that your average user could understand, that incorporated everything that you can do in macOS, every keyboard combination, every mouse stroke, all of that. Have you ever heard of the Oxford English Dictionary? It would rival that. And readers, for those of you who haven't heard of the Oxford English Dictionary, it's about 26 volumes. And those volumes are about 1,000 pages each.
That's a lot of words.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, the thing about manuals goes back to discoverability, which we've already mentioned. I like that Apple is doing things like putting up their little tutorials and tips on their website. I like that they have the Tips app. I like that they are posting tips on Twitter. And I like that they have their support Twitter account where they're engaging customers that have questions. But the big thing is, if you don't know, then how are you going to know what to ask?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Apple believes that people don't really want to read manuals. It's considered nerdy and geeky, and they just want to get on with their iPhone life. And if they find a tip that's useful, fine. We'll, you know, provide some handy, joyful stuff from time to time, but we're not going to make you sit down and read a manual. We're not going to bother with it.
You make a good point, John, and it's not just Apple, and it's not just today. You know, I started out my tech life in technical support, and we had a saying that we would throw around with each other, but we would never in a million years say it to a customer. Mm-hmm. RTFM.
Read the friendly manual.
Read the friendly manual. You thought I was going to go there, Jeff, didn't you?
Now, I knew where you were going, but I also know that you know me well enough that you didn't want to make me have to edit a show.
Nope. Yeah. And you know, it was a common problem. You know, when I started out, when we were still on Windows 3 for workgroups, and Windows 95 was just about to come out, and Windows 95 had a manual. Mm-hmm. Nobody read it.
See, I think that's a big thing right there. No, nobody reads it.
Yeah.
There are those of us that loved having the manuals. I would put post-it notes in mine, you know, little tags, marking stuff so that I could find the things that I needed to reference on a regular basis. But I'm an outlier there. And,
oh, yeah.
And so I think we're in this transition phase where we've gone beyond the printed manual as a routine thing. Mm-hmm. And companies need to figure out a more dynamic and engaging way to educate their customers about how to use their products.
And I think Apple is on the right track with that. And it's not just their Twitter status updates. It's their YouTube videos.
Yep. Yeah, the video thing is really great. I'm so glad they're doing all of these things, because it's frustrating at times. It's surprising at times. But, you know, like every now and then you will say, you know, you can do this. And I'm surprised I didn't know about it. Every now and then Melissa, when she writes a tip, I'll read it and I'll just be shocked. How did I not know
that? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So discoverability, that's what we need. And hopefully Apple is on the right track. We're out of time. We have to wrap up.
Oh, really? Wow.
I know. Yeah.
John, time flies when you're having fun.
It really does. And I always have fun with you guys.
Yeah, me too.
John, thanks for being here today.
You're welcome. Bye, Jeff B.
Bye, John M.
Jeff, thank you for being here as well.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners, thank you for joining us this week. Don't forget, no show on Monday or Tuesday next week, but we'll be back on Wednesday. And if you are a Background Mode podcast listener, that's the interview show that John does with amazingly cool people. He's not going to have a show on Monday either because he's a slacker. No, wait, because we're not actually working on Monday.
Wow.
I love you, John.
I love you too.
And hey, so everyone have a wonderful weekend. If you're in the United States, have a safe holiday weekend. And everywhere else, just have a great weekend. We'll see everyone again on Wednesday.